I've been having lots of conversations in the past almost 2 weeks now about how to be present in the world, how to be public in the world, how to be what we believe in, how to live the kind of world we want. And it's, as you have probably noticed yourselves, it's complicated. It's hard to figure out how to be yourself in public, especially when things seem scary. So as some of these conversations that I had unfolded, a few people said some things that were pretty interesting and that I wanted you all to hear. And so this morning, Heather Crowley, Stephanie Marshall, and Sylvia Foster offer their reflections about how they have worked on being public with what they believe, with what they love. And of course, being public means lots of things. It can mean calling your representative. That is a public act, even if no one else in this room knows about it. Letters to the editor, participating in demonstrations, just engaging people in conversations, participating in organizations, even things as simple as this. And these wise women have some wonderful stories about how we live into the world we're in.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me? So when we were talking about this last week, I kind of related to Kendra. I remember when we came back from Albany this past spring, there was a small group of us that went down there to protest against bomb trains that were carrying explosive fracked oil through low-income neighborhoods in Albany. And I had shared it at Joys and Sorrows when we got back because it was a joy to me to do that with the people in this congregation. And people came up to me, some people came up to me afterwards, and they said, thank you for doing that. And one person said to me, I would never have the courage to do something like that. And I kind of laughed internally to myself because that's what I used to tell myself. I'd never have the courage to do anything like that. I wasn't an activist. I was too afraid to protest things, even though I morally disagreed with stuff that was going on. I couldn't afford to take a risk like that and put myself out there in that manner. I didn't have the time in my crazy schedule to do it. And what difference could me, one little person, make? And that was the internal dialogue that was going on in my head most of the time. And I'll tell you, it still goes on. Albany was the first time that I had participated in an act of nonviolent civil disobedience. And the decision seemed to arise naturally out of working with a small group of people in this congregation that were like-minded and passionate about climate and social justice issues that we were all working on. I don't think it was a decision that I would have made on my own, and the work that I did with my friends in the group really connected me to them, and it also connected me to my internal compass. I guess the big thing that sort of drives me is the realization that my children's future and their children's future is threatened by what is going on in our world right now. And it's been a huge motivation for me to do something. It ignited a need in me to act, to stand up for what was right, to take risks I wouldn't have otherwise done on my own. And I have to tell you, the fear doesn't really go away once you decide to act. At least it didn't for me. In fact, the opposite happened. It actually really intensified. I remember when we were driving down to Albany in our carpool together, and the voice inside my head was kind of saying, what are you doing here? You should be home with your family. And then the night before the action, we had a training session, and I remember the legal team got up and kind of was telling everyone what the risks were. And then the organizer said the plan was that all of us were going to go and sit down on the train tracks tomorrow. And then once the police asked us to get up and leave, you could sort of remove yourself from the tracks if you didn't want to risk being arrested. And then we practiced kind of going peacefully around. We role played going peacefully around police officers. And let's just say that at that point, the internal voice in my head had gone into full-blown freak-out mode. My understanding had been that there was going to be a group that would risk arrest and that there would be a group of us that were going to be there for moral support. And I had intended on being in the latter group. And I was like, this plan, this is not what I was planning. What's going on? And it now seemed we were all doing the same civil disobedience. And I was like really terrified at that point. But the calmness and camaraderie of the group of people I went down with really helped me find the strength and courage to follow through with what I had planned to do. And I guess I've learned from this and other experiences that the fear doesn't go away when I act. I've learned to tell the fear to put its seatbelt on and come along for the ride because I'm still going to do what I'm going to do despite the fear. And I find inspiration and determination in standing up for my kids' rights to inherit a livable planet and in the support of others who share that dream. The poet John Berryman said, "We must travel in the direction of our fear." And I do believe that's true. For me, it has been a way to find my courage and to grow spiritually and as a person. And I think now, especially with what's going on in our country, it's not the time to retreat into our fear and despair. It's the time to stand up collectively and to shine our light together into the gathering dark.
My journey began with my mother saying, "If you don't have something good to say, don't say anything at all." And then there was this whole notion that we were swimming in. It's not ladylike to be angry. Actually, all emotions were messy and complicated. And so good parents and good children would be known for being tidy and seemly. And then there was complaining. And that was just downright rude. So this sort of orientation pretty much ruled out my being a future voice of democracy. You know, democracy is noisy, messy, and complicated. So putting that to the side, another part of my childhood came to life, and that was my Universalist church Sunday school. We talked about listening to what our hearts tell us and remembering how we are connected to people all over the world in love of life and love of the earth. As an adult, I joined this UU church, and along came the idea of going to the town hall steps with a protest sign and sitting in planning meetings that meant going against my mother's voice. So when it came to choose whether or not to go to the town hall, for the first time, I had this kind of weight of the sign in my hand, but also my mother's voice in my mind. I think what won out in the end was that my heart hurt. Seeing all the suffering, I then sort of remembered my mom's voice saying, "If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain." The poet said it, my mother said it all through my childhood. So I could choose to be comfortable or I could choose to be vulnerable. And I knew I had something to offer in that public square. A lot of people got me there. There was a lot of strength in this church and what it stands for, and my friends, and the faces of the children in my life. I like the saying that the heart is the home of democracy. It keeps me making the posters and going to those steps with so many others who probably feel as sort of tenuous as I have. That feeling seems to be where the connections are made, and so my love for this world and the connections I make each time keep me going back.
For me, I give you three snapshots from my childhood. The first one was I was a very shy kid, and when I encountered people, usually adults, my first reaction was to hide, and if I couldn't hide, I wouldn't say anything. And my mother's refrain to me was, "Steffi, dear, you must speak to people." And that has gone with me through my life. The second snapshot was in 1960 when it was a Nixon-Kennedy election, and Nixon was coming to our town up north in Conway. The Republican candidates came, the Democrats didn't, because in my county, my mother was one of 13 Democrats. And she asked me to go with her to see Nixon, and I kind of didn't understand why. But what she did was she went to see Nixon, and she took Kennedy pamphlets and quietly walked through the crowd, passing them out. And the next snapshot is a recurring dream that I had when I was 9 or 10 years old at the height of the Cold War. And the dream was that I was in my house in the basement, and these Russian soldiers came with guns, and they came down to me in the basement, and they said, "Look, will you be a communist, or do we have to take you away?" And I would wake up at that point, and I would lie in bed and say, "Well, what would I do? What would I say?" And I think what I generally came up with is, "Look, I don't mind being a communist. Communism's fine. I really don't care." But that stayed with me, that dilemma, because I had that sense that that answer really spoke to a couple things. One, I didn't have any belief that I would really stick up for. And second, that I was pretty cowardly, and it was not a courageous belief. And that has gone throughout time. And for a long time, I would be politically involved, and I would go and do some demonstrations, and I would write some letters. But I was a dabbler of issues. And then in 2002, when we were leading up to the start of the Iraq War, and we knew what was happening, we knew what was likely, I had been here for about 5 years, and you can't sit here for 5 years without that message of live what you believe kind of sinking in. There was going to be a demonstration down at the town hall, and I had to decide whether to go. And the concerns, there's so much of what Sylvia and Heather said was, you know, what if I'm wrong? What if this is really the right thing to do, and I'm wrong, and I don't know the facts, and all of that? What if I see friends and I disagree with them? And this is a small town, and I'm going to be very exposed. Holding a sign is very exposing. What if something happens and it's not safe? And what if it just doesn't matter? And I showed up there, and the first thing that happened was there was a counter demonstration on the other side of the street of those supporting the war, and there was the mother of one of my daughter's friends. And I remember saying, "Well, I don't know what to do," so I waved, and she waved back. And we didn't really talk about it after that. But what I found there was so many folks from here, and that the tone of it was very serious and energetic, but it wasn't angry and aggressive. And in fact, it was fun, and it was great to be there, and I felt so supported, and I felt courageous, which I hadn't felt before. And then about 6 years ago, I heard Bill McKibben speak here at We the People, and I remember walking home from that. He's one of the founders of 350.org and talked about climate change. And I was walking home, and this inner voice just said, "I cannot and I will not go on living my life without dealing with this." And at that moment, I had this belief that I was willing to stand up for. And to really hold on to, and that's what I've been doing really since then, and inviting you and participating with many of you in Exeter. I think the town hall is an extension of our community room at this point. It really, we just go there, and for those of you who haven't been, it's really fun. And then I went to Port. I extended it out and moved into planning and executing things, and went to Portsmouth and have connected with a lot of other people. And then going to New York and being there with 400,000 people for the climate march. And what I just have internalized so much is this saying of, alone we are just one drop of water, but together we are an ocean. And I am still practicing speaking, and my mother is still telling me I must speak to these people.
I have a story here about a conversation that I engaged in on a street corner, one of those, okay, I need to talk to this person, that I will put in writing and send out in our electronic letter sending method. And I'll just tell you this one story about, and the off chance that you're headed for a Thanksgiving meal that doesn't feel like the corner outside the town hall here, when we're the way that Stephanie just described, if you're anticipating some conversations that you're not quite sure how to go into. Earlier this week, some of us had a conversation about how to engage conversations across pretty profound differences. And one of the things that I suggested is that, especially at a Thanksgiving meal, you can propose a toast. And you can propose a toast first thing, maybe over appetizers, maybe the very beginning of a meal. And the toast is, let us speak respectfully of each other. Let us engage each other with kindness. If you are aware that there's a lot to navigate, you might even add, we've tried debating each other, and let's call that done. At this meal, let us be respectful and kind of each other. Can I get a toast to that? Most people will toast to that. And then if you need to have that toast multiple times during the meal, you can. These ritual meals invite those sorts of ritual activities of toasting to kindness and gratitude. And if emotions are running high, which they are in our country right now, to just keep reminding each other of kindness and gratitude will be useful for everyone, no matter where you are on whatever set of issues. So come back with your toast stories. And my other tool for these things is to think of yourself as a UN observer. Yes, you're there to have a meal, but you're also there to see what the people are saying. It helps you just be present for what's happening without getting too pulled into whatever debate might be available. So bring us back your stories about your toasts. Really write down, if you get some good ones, write them down and we'll share them. And what it's like to be a UN observer at a Thanksgiving dinner table. Because really, what we want to do is increase the love in our world. That's always been true. Unitarian Universalists have been wearing these bright yellow shirts for some years now that say, standing on the side of love. So we just want to put our love out in public as much as we can. So it is a week of gratitude and a week of living into our love.